Welcome, everybody. I'm delighted to introduce Matthew Pijpenberg, senior partner with Matterhorn Asset Management. And he finds his way there via being an attorney by trade and also started a hedge fund during the dot-com boom and then became home office orientated, serving the high net worth as well as managing his own funds. Matthew, glad to have you on the show.
Great to be here. Looking forward to this conversation.
Excellent. Yes, I was commenting on how well-tanned you are for someone who's in Switzerland way, but we are actually talking to you in the south of France, and you enjoy exercising your privileges of an outdoor life, which I like to hear.
Got to take it when you can get it, especially in the summer here. It's wonderful. But yeah, between Zurich and France isn't a bad commute. Not a bad life.
Not bad at all. I have French family actually in the south of France, and I went to a wedding and I was on, trying to remember the names now, they don't stick easily for an Englishman, but on the peninsula down south, and it just was beautiful. It was just driving. We went to the amazing little wine places where the wedding ceremony was had. It was warm, beautiful, everybody relaxed, having the time. Anyway, what's on the top of your mind, Matthew? Where are we? I mean, surely this must be a freakazoid environment. Where do you start with pointing out all the vagaries and the excesses?
Gosh, there's so many rivers leading to the same dirty ocean, so many threads to pull on that all kind of speak to, you know, so many different crises at once. We've got a currency crisis, a debt crisis, a geopolitical crisis, a candid crisis, a transparency crisis. We've got an end game that's clearly centralized and consolidated. And, you know, they all kind of stem from the same disease throughout history. When a country or nation or bloc is in debt up to its ears, it usually results in the debasement of the currency, dishonesty from the top down, and ultimately some form of war and temporary pleasure followed by what Hemingway called permanent ruin, inflation, debasement, and war. And of course, those are broad statements. There was a time when that seemed sensational or clickbait. And, you know, you can have all the credentials in the world and spend your life actually informing yourself on these things and knowing markets, knowing laws, knowing politics, knowing your country, knowing other countries, knowing languages. And you're still considered a conspiracy theorist just by speaking the obvious. I think we're all getting tired of being labeled left or right. I think it's not about left or right. It's about up and down in terms of integrity or no integrity, speaking your honest convictions that hopefully are grounded in some deeply rooted level of experience and informed intent. I think you can get more candor from someone who's been on those sides of the trenches than you can get from a politician in any country, in any bloc. Although ironically, I find it very frustrating because I'm as American as apple pie, although I've spent many decades overseas. I'm as American as apple pie and I'm a patriot, but I'm not very proud of where our country and our policies and our currency are going. And yet, I think you have to be very critical. And it's ironic that I have to, in Europe, I can get access to white papers from Putin or from others and find it far more truthful than what I'm getting from, you know, Powell or the White House. And that's not, again, to be anti-American. I would much prefer to live in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia or fly fish in Michigan than be in St. Petersburg or Beijing or Shanghai. I'm not saying that I'm pro-China or pro-Russia. What I am saying, though, you know, when Putin reminds us that the money supply has increased by 38% in the last 2 years, that's important. That should be talked about in our country with the ramifications more honestly. And that's more in the last 2 years than in the last 20 years in the past. And the euro is the same thing, 20% increase in 2 years in money supply. There are ramifications of that to currencies and debts and politics that need to be discussed more candidly. And it doesn't make you anti-American or pro-East. You just have to call a duck sometimes. So I'm very concerned about the Western bloc, the G7. I'm very concerned about the watershed moment that was this war in Ukraine, which I think was avoidable. But I think the sanctions were, I think we can all agree, an absolute disaster. It's not just me. Even Obama warned about this. Hell, you know, John Maynard Keynes warned about weaponizing a world reserve currency. So it's not just anti-American sentiment from an American in the south of France working in Switzerland. It's actually a very concerned American, a concerned global citizen looking for a lot more transparency on where we're going in the next 10 years and where we've been in the last 10 years and the consequences of that. So I'm pretty jaded, to be honest, right now. I don't think it's tinfoil hatted anymore. I don't think it's left or right politics. I don't think it's monetary views. I think it's common sense. And the more we can find platforms to have these discussions, debates, disagreements, I've always invited people to disagree with my macro views. But I think the math, the simple math, not the charts, not the Keltner bands, not the Bollinger bands, all the smart stuff that we and you do, just keep it simple, stupid. You look at debt, you look at backwards policies. You look at stressors in the credit markets. You look at simple things like yields and rates. You look at currency movements. And you can explain this to anyone who's curious if they're willing to do a little homework. And I think that's our job, to try and keep the complex simple without being sensational, being candid and transparent, which is what our central bankers and politicians from the EU to the US have forgot how to do a long time ago.
I think that's a brilliant opening statement. A man of principle speaks. And I also want to just say a massive fan of the average everyday American person, but a major critique of the capture of the master puppeteer string holders is not to criticize the everyday value of an American citizen. I'm looking forward, now that they've lifted their requirements on travel for foreigners, to actually visiting after my Panama sojourn and just enjoying the company of Americans in true conversation. And most everyday citizens and smart people like yourself are very similar of mine. They're deeply concerned. But we're talking about actually a transnational disease that has permeated the top. It's almost like a separate parasite has infected the brain. And we're not blaming the individual cells of the fish body, but there is clearly the wrong man. There is a bacteria that has got in behind the controls that even the indigenous citizens of America will have real issue with and longstanding. I don't think you're being unpatriotic by being critical at all. With that said, unsound money and positioning. I mean, you're working in the home office environment. We'll be sure to give you an opportunity to sign off for when people want to engage potentially for that. But to sketch out what you typically are seeing and how you are giving counsel to people that totally recognize that opening statement you just made and are looking to protect, where do you start in terms of your planning for the process that we are likely to go through, that the parasite behind the locust brain's controls that is going to take it to? How do people position? What should they be thinking about?
Yeah, I start, and I've said it so many times, it's kind of becoming a syllogism. I try again, start from 30,000 feet on these conversations and then get down into the specifics, whether it's on specific allocations or whether it's on precious metals or currency insurance. But I always start with, again, throughout history, and there really are no exceptions. Throughout history, I say you can go back to the Ming Dynasty, ancient Rome. You can go to the 1930s in Europe. You can go to 1789 France. You can go to the 60s in Cuba. You can go through just about every regime change in South America. Whenever a country gets into debt, gets over its skis in debt, that's followed by a market crisis, a currency crisis, an inflation crisis, and then some form of extreme centralized control from the left or the right, extreme political left or the extreme political right. And again, there is no exception to this. We are now finding ourselves in such a scenario right now. And it's, as Hemingway said, you know, debt destroys nations. David Hume said it, not just, you know, pundits or economists. You can be literary, philosophical. David Hume was a philosopher in the 1750s. He warned that debt destroys nations. Hemingway said, when you get into too much debt, you debase the currency, you have inflation, and you usually distract in war. We've been in a proxy war in my country since I was born, Vietnam to Afghanistan to, frankly, the Ukraine, which is a proxy war where way too many people are dying for what should have been an avoidable war. And if, again, I think so this cycle of debt to extreme politics and extreme currency debasement. And, you know, again, you can use quotes to simplify. Baron Rothschild said, you give me a central bank, it doesn't matter who's in power, I control things. The power of the central bank, the centralization of the central bank in our markets have destroyed free price discovery. This is something David Stockman warned long before COVID, long before the Ukraine war. When you've got an artificial force of supply and demand that is independent of Congress, but is effectively so politicized, everything is politicized. It creates good times until, you know, I've joked, you can have a lot of hangovers. I mean, a lot of fun on martinis, but you're going to have a hangover from printed money and repressed rates. The good times we enjoyed on a zero interest rate policy to keep politicians elected and give Bernanke a Nobel Prize, which I've always said should have been in fiction, not in economics, because anyone can solve a debt
problem. Humor. I would go for humor, that. Irony and humor, yeah. So much to unpack. So sound money principles should actually be the most spoken about thing in times like these, and they're the least spoken about thing. So I'm assuming precious metals potentially plays a large part in your portfolio of preparation for the forthcoming bloodbath. In other words, this raft's going over the cliff one way or another. How do you prepare? Gold and silver?
Well, absolutely. And of course, and people rightly are going to raise their eyebrow and say, well, you're a partner at a base in a gold broker, you know, gold storage business, the biggest in the world in Zurich, the private outside of the banking system. So of course you're going to have the opportunity to talk your book. And I am talking my book. Yeah, I'm a Swiss based gold executive and I certainly have a bias. I could also be flogging bonds for Goldman Sachs, but I'm not because I believe in one and not the other. And yeah, I have a bias. I have a bias for gold. I look at gold probably different than some of your listeners or viewers because I stopped being a trader 20 years ago when I got very lucky on an IPO during the dot-com bubble. And I didn't know a stock from a bond and I was running hedge fund. And I had a good friend from high school and college. We were funded by his father. We made a lot of money on a pre-IPO. And suddenly, too dumb, too stupid, too young, I was responsible for actual money. Yeah. And when I realized I had that lottery ticket, like I see a lot of people getting, you know, with Bitcoin too, when you come into some money too young, you better learn how to manage it quickly. And that to me became my personality was more about preserving rather than making more.
Yeah.
I look at gold as an investment opportunity. I say it over and over. It's currency for already dying insurance. It's like getting a good premium on life insurance when you've already been diagnosed with a fatal illness. There's no doubt that since we decoupled from the gold standard, when Nixon welched on the Bretton Woods promise to have a world reserve currency backed by gold, that the purchasing power of the dollar, like every major currency since 1971, has lost over 95% of its value when measured against a milligram of gold. To me, that's not a gold bug apology or an excuse to come be a client of mine for a fee in Zurich. It's just common sense to preserve your wealth because whether you measure that in pesos or yen or euros or dollars or kroners, I say it over and over, you're running uphill in roller skates because the inherent purchasing power, how you measure your portfolio, your checking account, your credit card statement is in currency that's losing its inherent purchasing power. Right. And since central banks in the West won't back that with gold, I have to become my own central banker. Whatever my net worth is, I have to have a portion of that gold backed myself. So I have to own private physical gold held outside of an incredibly fractured banking system, the symptoms of which have been everywhere and obvious lately. And I have to become my own vault, my own private banker, my own central bank, because the Fed and the ECB and the Bank of Japan, the Royal Bank of Australia, they're not going to do it. So that's my argument.
That is actually the decentralization everybody should be talking about, which we are currently not getting in the blockchain and crypto or the privacy. I keep seeing how privacy is tactfully avoided. On the Bitcoin being supposedly, you know, the tools of securing hits and AK-47s. In fact, it's an open source banking, quite clear, blogging your financials couldn't be more transparent. And it's amazing how little privacy and the fact that this is going to drive an absolute huge, this is an icebreaker smashing through glaciers here in terms of the privacy element. And this just gets so under-referenced. Of course, that's exactly what they want in surveillance finance eras. The great digital and what you actually purvey, and you've aligned with your assessment, and there's no harm in that. We all should be aligning in terms of our on-balance of probability assessments of the worldview, is absolutely correct in my view. Gold is physical, and it doesn't have to be put in any digital form. Although... what do you suspect? Do you not think that there might be a period of, after we've had a certain amount of appreciation, which is fairly spectacular and a bit of a, the gold bugs versus everybody else who's been impoverished by interest rate spikes and various other dilemmas, I think that are going to befall us, that they might come for registration. In other words, part of controlling and the great totalitarian overreach is this absolute power and the fact that no one else gets to be rich. It's not that they are totally supremely wealthy, but that no one else must even have a modicum of wealth. We all have to have reliance on state for the absolute control that they seek. In other words, the UBI and all of that. What will be the next playbook and how would your particular entity protect against that? I liked, by the way, as part response, you're a non-banking holder and you made that point. But what else do you have to add on the fact that they're not going to let us get away with it? They've got a plan for gold bugs.
Well, again, it's a fair and sober question. You know, there's risk in everything, and there's even risk in gold. And if you look at it from a cynical perspective, if the end game is more control, more consolidation, more surveillance, of which central bank digital currency is the most obvious symptom of late, and hopefully the more that citizens become informed, the harder it will be to unravel. But I think I'll get to your question, but I think central bank digital currency, before I get to gold, but I think CBDC will be rolled out like every bad idea, like every covert operation, and in the backdrop of a crisis. They'll wait for another 2008 or March of 2020 when things are really falling apart, which they created themselves, to then usher in this miracle solution of putting your assets as a liability at a central bank. And we're doing this for your own good. We'll avoid bank runs. We'll give you better interest rates. We'll give you better terms. They won't talk about the fact that we'll be using a ledger like a Visa or a MasterCard to monitor all your spending, and then like a MasterCard or a Visa, close your spending if you write, say, or do something we don't like, or you gather with people we don't like. So that surveillance and control is obviously the Trojan horse behind central bank digital currency. And more people are figuring that out. Again, it won't stop them from coming up with an excuse to do it, in my opinion, but I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I hope central bank digital currency dies on landing, but we'll see. In terms of gold, you know, when Egon von Greyer started Matterhorn over 20 years ago with his own family funds and a few friends, he was thinking about these risks already. But the risks have changed in the last 20 years. He wanted privacy. He wanted to be outside of the commercial banking system, which he knew very well. He wanted to be his own vault, so to speak. He wanted it to be separate and secure. And here we have the safest vault in the world inside of a James Bond movie. But notwithstanding all of that, he wanted outside of the banking system. He wanted his own physical gold completely allocated and segregated in your name. The larger question at that time, 20 years ago, neutrality in Switzerland was truly neutral. That's changed. And even though Switzerland has the best reputation relative to the other horses in the glue factory, changes within Switzerland, the forced merger with Swiss National Bank and Credit Suisse, the bifurcation of laws, the European Union and Switzerland have a history of breaking their own rules when needed. The question then is, will Switzerland cave, and will your gold, even in places like Switzerland or whatever jurisdiction, become controlled?
Ask on that because of their position on Ukraine, where apparent neutrality seems to have been compromised as well, and they seem to be wading in. Does that see your particular concern, Matterhorn Asset Management, consider other locations? We have a favorite, a possible other. I mean, it's very hard. The whole world is captured. This is a leper colony globally. There's been a transnational disease that has been put into the brains of all the fish, if we're to put it that way. But we do see Singapore as a potential capital formation hub, as the acceptable face of China. The Indonesian demographic is very compelling. We've got money moving, as Kissinger said, from the West to East. We've got gold clearly migrating from the West to East. There's also going to be the Middle East. They're kind of got a reputational issue. Again, Singapore could play as a hub that's well surrounded there, but we see some capital formation still happening in the Middle East proper. I know there's a lot of Dubai rinsing of what I would describe as blood gold that is being subsistence mined in Southern Africa, Zimbabwe in particular. And I've got a lot of narratives for men on the ground of China going back with nuggets of gold for refining, literally, again, subsistence gold that has been picked up. Very low rates paid to people, you know, kids in shorts and their feet scratching in the ground almost. It's funny and tragic, I suppose. But there's clearly an unbelievable appetite in China. Not only are they the biggest producer, but they actively are the biggest importers almost. I would say if you include Hong Kong into the Beijing and the rest of the, which I think is literally a province now, we're going to see the Hong Kong dollar eventually fold, the peg fold in time. All of that happening. Do you concur that the gold is moving west to east, Kissinger?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We'll get into the actual facts of that in a second. But there's really two parts to your question. Is Switzerland and other places still the safest place? And where do you hold your gold? That's your counterparty risk. It's going to be national. You know, you mentioned Singapore. We have a major vault in Singapore. We have a major vault in Zurich. We have another one in a non-disclosed location in the Swiss Alps, which is the safest vault in the world. But as we mentioned, Switzerland isn't what it used to be. It was very disappointing to see them toe the Western line during the Ukraine sanctions. That was a shock for Swiss and non-Swiss residents. And we spend a lot of time looking at jurisdictions. The simple answer is we can put gold anywhere in the world where any client wants it. We still, having looked at all the other horses, so to speak, have chosen Singapore and Zurich and Switzerland in general as the best jurisdictions. 29% of the gold exports, or 29% of Swiss exports are gold, and 70% of the gold that is refined comes out of Zurich. It's essential to the Swiss economy that gold is a protected asset. notwithstanding Switzerland bending the knee to the West and to the U.S., we've looked at so many of their jurisdictions, we're highly convinced, maybe you could say biased, but still, we wrestle with this. There's no doubt in our mind that Switzerland is very, very safe. And Singapore is considered the Zurich or the Switzerland of the East, and we have a big vault in Singapore for clients who want to have that in an Asian locale. But, you know, again, with our logistics and our infrastructure, if we have a client who doesn't want to be in Switzerland or doesn't want to be in Singapore, we can put it just about any place in the world. The major question is, if you're owning physical gold, you definitely, to that confiscation or regulation issue, it's very important not to hold gold in your own national jurisdiction. There are still privacy rights that are existing in Switzerland that are superior to your privacy rights, say, in Idaho or Michigan or Tennessee, if you're an American holding physical gold there. There is no perfect answer. There's just relatively better answers.
Yep.
So we're quite confident with Singapore and Zurich or Switzerland, but other jurisdictions we can accommodate. To your other question about gold moving from west to east, this, again, is not clickbait. It is empirically obvious. I mean, just last year, well, in 2010, central banks in general became net buyers rather than net sellers of gold. But if you look at what happened in 2022, you had 150% increase in central bank gold purchasing. The majority of that was out east. And you've got China and Russia. And again, you got to think about the implications of this. If China and Russia, who are the biggest producers of gold, Russia produces 250 tons a year, and China and India are the biggest importers at the same time of being major producers with Russia, China, India, massive amounts of imports, over 36,000 tons in the last 20 years, just between Russia and India. Then you add what China doesn't disclose to the World Gold Council. The amount of gold stacking taking place in China and Russia and other BRIC countries is no coincidence. And it's no coincidence that increased it in an unbelievably rapid pace, the fastest pace since gold has been measured by central banks in 50 years. It's no coincidence that countries like China and Russia and the BRICS, and China and Russia in particular, have been importing and stacking gold, and central banks outside of the West are stacking gold after we weaponized the U.S. dollar, froze the FX reserves of a major nation, not Venezuela or Iran, but a major nation, which even Obama, Yellen, and again, John Maynard Keynes said, don't go there, don't do this. Whenever you have a world reserve currency, you can't weaponize it against a major power. It's no coincidence that the world looked at what the U.S. did, whether they were pro or against the war, and said, that's a mistake. Because now the genie's out of the bottle. Now the world reserve currency is a weaponized currency. It's a politicized currency. We've always, especially in the BRICS and the emerging markets, which are 86% of the population and 76% of GDP growth, they have been importing American inflation for decades. There's a great book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman that would explain that far better than me. But now there is an absolute pretext to say, you know what, let's find a way to not destroy the U.S. dollar as a world reserve currency or end its status, but let's find a way to end its hegemony and get out of its purview and out from underneath that umbrella. It doesn't happen overnight. The U.S. dollar will still be the world reserve currency. It won't be the ruble of the yuan. There's no bond market. There's no rule of law in China or Russia to do that. But what is happening undeniably is there is a move away from the U.S. dollar. Its 20-year average growth rate or pace is down 11% over the last 20 years. It's down 11% last year. It's down over 22% since 2008. There's less need, less demand for the U.S. dollar now. And you've got 41 countries, including the BRICS, obviously, that are making bilateral agreements outside of the U.S. dollar. You've got the Chinese trying to come up with the new SWIFT exchange. This, unlike the SWIFT, it's called the SIPS. You've got China, you know, now if you in Russia, there are 50 banks that will accept the Chinese yuan for deposits. You've got Russia making deals with China to sell oil and gas in rubles and not in U.S. dollars. You've got the Gulf states now looking at other dollars besides the U.S. dollar for the petrodollar. You've got ruble traded between Russia and China. You've got the rise of this BRICS bank. You've got guys like Glasiev and Bulbakov in Russia who are right now, as we speak, coming up with a way to come up with a settlement system that's gold-backed, that's outside of the U.S. dollar. All these things are slow, steady movements away from the U.S. dollar. This is not clickbait sensational that says the dollar's going to zero, it's the end of the U.S., it's the end of the U.S. dollar, or even the U.S. as a world reserve currency, but it is the end of that trusted image of the U.S., that trusted belief in the U.S. dollar. And again, there are others who have the milkshake theory, which I actually agree with a lot, that, you know, I used to joke when I used to fly fish with my son, I still do, we ride horses and fly fish, it's my two favorite things, but my son's better at both than me. But when we go fly fishing, I'd spend an hour with my waders trying to untangle the knots of a fly fishing line. And the derivative markets and the euro dollar markets, where all these dollars go in, is like that fly fishing line. It's like the Roach Motel. Dollars go in, they don't come out. There is a massive demand for U.S. dollars in the treasury markets, the derivative markets, the euro dollar markets, because that's collateral for all the leverage the derivatives live and breathe off of. So there will always be demand for the U.S. dollar. But that milkshake theory made a lot more sense prior to March of 2022 when we weaponized the U.S. dollar and gave China, Russia, the BRICS, and everybody else who was annoyed by the inflation of the U.S. dollar and the forced loans, $14 trillion worth of loans that we paid back in U.S. dollar-denominated paper. When you raise the interest rates and you weaponize that dollar the same year, people don't want to pay back those debts. They can't afford to pay back those debts. They have to reduce their own currencies. Look at countries like Argentina. It's tragic. So slowly but surely, they now have the political will and the pretext to say, let's try and find new arrangements. Again, this does not happen overnight, but it's undeniable. And, you know, Ronnie Sterfel and Mark Valick just came out with the 2023 and Gold Retrust Report. It is brilliant. Every year it comes out in Chinese, it comes out in German, comes out in English. It is absolutely brilliant. And they try to keep it simple, but the data in there showing the flow of money and showing the flow away from the U.S. dollar is undeniable. This is not sensationalism. And it's undeniable that Eastern banks in particular, but central banks in general, are stacking gold like never before. You have to ask.
Can I intercede a little bit there in your flow? This is great flow, and I'm standing largely back, but it's also at the expense of treasury. So there's been no longer purchases of treasuries. There's actually been a reduction in treasuries, and there's been an acceleration in gold. And I would say those are a pair trades going the other way now. In other words, they recognize the calling. One of our predictions that I've just come off a podcast with another group of younger generation guys, but pretty awake, and I'm impressed with them, Black Swan guys. And I was just saying to them, and it feels pertinent to say again, you were engaged in the dot-com boom, the equities mania run-up that was all about the internet, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody saw that melt up. What shocks me is that nobody saw the final melt up of the bond market of March 2020, and that we crossed a Rubicon and a 40-year period in trusting debt, and buy the damn dip became a meme of 40 years that ended on bonds. Particularly, it's been a 40-year bull cycle, and that it ended. People still were entertained with fantasies of NERPs and ZERPs and, you know, that could come back, and we actually will never see again. And this is entrenched and proven by the inflation. And I want to, you're someone who's not been afraid to bring up some of the more on the fringe and where there's clear conspiring aspects. I see the farm purchases in Holland, for example, which are forced. They're paying a 20% premium to force people out. A right sizing of the food provision chain in the name of watermelon communism green. And the similar going on through Bill Gates, as well documented, biggest purchaser of farmlands in the States, as entrenched, and they're taking out that production. In other words, it's not to own that production, they are right sizing down. So that is putting a floor under the inflationary costs on at the till, point of sale for necessities and basics. So I almost feel that the scenario that we are getting set up for is stubborn. We've called it hyperstagflation. In fact, we consider 70 stagflation. We consider this the turbocharged version, where the inflation is already typically under stagflation is stubborn, but it is going to be super stubborn and even incrementally climbing, even in an environment of crushed consumer and absolute depression-like living standards for retail consumer. We're talking about government crowding out expenditure. The military-industrial complex shares are the ones that are all near high. This is government spending. Government is becoming the economy. We are creeping into that Bolshevik communistic realm. And we're going to have potentially a spike in interest rates to shake out all those with any form of leverage. I refer to debt as the nanothermite and interest rates as the nanothermite of personal finances. Middle-class people that keep buying a bigger house because they can always hold a sustainer 50% mortgage could find they face teens. Possibly. And we had a small microcosm of this in the UK during the Soros short. And imagine you had that on a bigger scale, how that would be perfect for impoverishing the mass leveraged middle class of America. And I do feel there's an attack vector on the West, which you've also concurred with. You find yourself in Switzerland warning your fellow American compadres. that is where I think you could get the dollar milkshake on this interest rate spike, stubborn hyperstagflation. It's going to be an interest rate cycle hike no one wants, but the debt market failure because of its expansive proliferation, the sudden dawning and realization that we turned from this 40-year and nobody noticed or spoke about the absolute boom and the blow-off that we had in debt markets. I'm just curious on that sort of forecasting that I'm attempting to do. Any commentary you have on that?
You've got 8 points in there that each are really important. If you think about it, and you started with the treasury market versus, say, the gold market, you know, the central banks were stacking gold and dumping treasuries. Foreigners were dumping treasuries. A lot has to do with the distortion in the bond market. Without getting into the history of the bond market, the one thing I took away from Wall Street and from being an investor and even a manager is the bond market is everything. If you understand the bond market, you really start to understand everything else without getting into all the reasons why.
And it's the least taught. Everybody's taught shares. Everybody understands Coca-Cola, but people, you know, you have to start explaining the inverse relationship with rates and then, carry on.
And I remember when I was a greenhorn and even when I was an allocator of my own and other people's money, when I met with credit markets or credit funds or multi-strat funds or long short equity funds, the smartest guys in the room, the varsity players, were always the bond guys. They understood spreads, they understood rates, and they understood the correlation to the equities markets. But to your point about, yes, keep in mind that foreigners were dumping treasuries and buying gold. There's a lot of implications there. That was 2022. Then you talked about 2020, when no one was talking about this, but pre-COVID, no one was talking about this. I wrote a book called Rigged to Fail, which was all about the bond market and how overvalued and distorted it was by ZIRP for years. And this fake put, this fake Fed put, this fake Fed financing, monetization of the U.S. Treasury market, and by indirectly all markets. And I said in February 19th, the markets were rigged to fail. It came out February 19th, 2020. The S&P had reached an all-time high, and my book was called Rigged to Fail. What are you talking about, Pipenberg? This is nothing. This is the Fed's got our back. Everything is great. A month later, you know, within a month, the S&P was down 36%. I did not predict COVID, but I said in Rigged to Fail, the bond market is unsustainable. It's unsustainable. Something's going to give. Yields are going to spike, and then we're really going to see problems. And then when you had this convenient, and this is where you talk about conspiracy, dark state, and people can laugh at that, and I could be dead wrong, but that COVID crisis could not have come at a better time, given how overvalued and dangerous the Fed and how illiquid the bond market was in 2020 by February when my book came out. And by coincidence, we had this either manufactured or very convenient crisis right when Wall Street and the bond market needed massive amounts of liquidity. Politically, they couldn't do another 2008 bailout. Even the average American who's been suffering through what is effectively feudalism in America and Wall Street socialism to benefit the top 10%, even the average American by 2020 wasn't going to see a bunch of banks bailed out with liquidity from the Fed. But when you have a humanitarian crisis like COVID, despite Gray Barrington saying this wasn't a humanitarian crisis, this was a manageable crisis, they shut down the world. And behind the scenes of those PPL checks and those STIMI checks was a massive bailout of the repo markets and the bond markets. Again,
it was a bigger bank bailout than 2007 and 8. Zero Hedge had one article and then it fell down and then very few people commented on it. Just one bank alone got 3.69 trillion. I think Nomura was the biggest recipient, but the Swiss banks got huge amounts. And this was the Fed, an American central bank, sending in trillions liquidity to a European and US Bank of America, JP Morgan were in the trough, all the usual suspects. But people,
again,
that's the other thing that doesn't get spoken about. The bond super spike valuation, which was a blow off. Everyone saw the dot-com. No one saw the bond market. No one. You clearly did. I'm talking retail market. Almost kept out of the loop when it comes to the debt market. And of course, the bank bailout was a bigger bank bailout than 2008.
It was a backdoor bailout and no one saw it because they were terrified for one, they were confused for two.
They were distracted.
And hey, they're going to let me stay at home and they'll send me a check and maybe a PPL loan and maybe I can even lever that. So there was confusion, which is how these things happen. I'm not saying here that it was a planned event to bail out the banks. I have no proof of that. I will say it was extremely convenient timing. That's all I'll say, because I don't want to get you or me canceled. But again, and then you go to this other point you were trying to make about, well, this is the end game we talked about from the very beginning, is more centralized control and more centralization and consolidation of the powers that be. So in addition to a bond market that was broken and bailed out under the umbrella of a COVID crisis, you also had a massive wealth inequality that's been building for years, massive wealth inequality. And you have to remember that the big Fed stimulus post-2008, where the S&P was ripping and the bond markets were supported, and there was this huge wealth transfer. But 90% of that overly inflated S&P and Dow and NASDAQ and Russell, 90% of that wealth went to the top 10% of Americans. Correct. It's just a fact. So, you know, again, you think the Fed has your back. They have one sector's back. They don't have the American public's back. It's just quantifiably the facts. Yeah. And again, but they'll and then
the lower 50% has 3% of the wealth, by the way.
It's appalling. And a few families have 50% of the top 10%. It is a formal few.
Because I covered this recently in a YouTube, I even argue that the stats are not accurate because everybody thinks the wealthiest man is Bill Gates or, you know, Larry Ellison or whomever the man of the moment is.
And again, this seems sensational. This seems conspiratory. It seems tinfoil hatted. But when you look under the hood, and again, it doesn't have to be my view, your view, or someone else's. Just do your own research. And again, it's sad. I think people do trust because they don't want to believe this. Not because they're stupid or ignorant, but because they're good people. They're honest people. They're from, my family's from the Midwest. Dave Stockman's from the Midwest. Kansas, Ohio, Michigan, St. Louis. These are not people triggering clever ideas to lever other people's money, lie to their face, and then leverage that and arbitrage that.
Good, honest people find it really hard to see devious, malicious intent in others.
Exactly.
And so the ones that do are the ones that are projecting, and it's actually a self-judgment. That's my experience. So you really have to realize that there's two forces that gets you into the whole spiritual and the adversarial element. Sorry, you were still unpacking my statement. We'd got about number two or three of eight.
But I mean, there are so many good points you're making there. But again, so you have to look at who really benefited, what was really going on. Key bono, that's a key phrase. The wealth inequality, the wealth transfer is historical. That never bodes well for a nation's history or future because that always, again, the end game is more control, more consolidation for your own good. We have to do this. It's an emergency measure. We're going to prevent further bank runs. But the other thing besides this wealth inequality and this dishonesty was this ever-present broken system, this central bank system, which is more and more what the market is. It's a Fed market. It's an ECB market. And we can talk about what Lagarde is trying to do and what her latest speech in the CFR was. It's all about more control, the stuff David Stockman warned about, again, long before COVID. But again, you go to that quote by Rothschild, I don't care who's in power. Give me who controls the money. If I can control the money, I have the power. The second thing that is important is who controls the information. And this goes to a quote by Mussolini from the 30s. What is fascism? The perfect marriage of the state and corporations. If information is corporatized and politicized, so you have one camp that controls the messaging and they lie by omission. It's what they don't report. It's what they don't talk about and what they distract you with, whether it's, I used to joke, it's Gwyneth Paltrow's ski accident or transgenders advertising beers. That keeps America angry and weird.
Outraged,
but they're not talking about debt cycles, bond market woes, central bank manipulation, wealth inequality, dishonesty from the Fed. But you control, you've got the fifth estate, the fourth estate, this media, which was the backbone of American democracy, this idea from Thomas Paine, Thomas Jefferson, free speech, the First Amendment, that journalists, investigative journalists will be a check on power. When now we don't have investigative journalists, we have pundit readers, we have Ken and Barbie newscasters, promulgating what is effectively Pravda-like propaganda in 21st century America. And that's not, again, sensational. It's politicized, left or right. It's politicized, but it's omitting a lot of facts. So when you have powers, corporations, this Mussolini definition of fascism, not democracy, when corporations control the message and a central bank controls the money, where is free democracy? Where is free price discovery? Where is natural supply and demand? I said a long time ago, capitalism died in 2008. It frankly died in 1910 when they got together on Jekyll Island. And it really died in 1913 when Wilson was forced to sign the Fed into law, which he regretted, one of the darkest days in his life. That says something. So these slow creep, again, Thomas Jefferson, Andrew Jackson said, if we get a central bank in control of our money, it's more dangerous than a foreign army invading our shores. These were pretty smart fellows. These were patriots. These were Americans. Yeah. These were the backbone of the American dream, the ideals. We have completely kneecapped that with a central bank.
There were three assassinations of presidents, and every one of them were engaged in trying to free the money.
Yeah.
Well, Kennedy, I think it was Garfield. My history gets a bit tested.
Yeah.
But yeah, we know. I unfortunately feel that Masonry's involvement right from the very foundation of America was the beginning, actually, and it was born with the virus. But it was a beautiful nation nonetheless, and still is to visit. Still but it's in peak. We've had peak America in terms of governance and rule of law. And that's the key thing. And that's the one tiny thing. Singapore is very totalitarian when you see how they behaved around the events of March 2020. But they have strived to maintain secrecy and rule of law and dispassionate non-engagement. That neutrality that the Swiss are slowly shedding as well. So they're going to be the best of the rest in terms of possible bolting, I think, could play a role. But I think personal custodianship and having vaulting in your own home or others' mechanisms or community-based could also play a role in the future as well. Because eventually, if you get too big, the big guys will show up at your door with a newly written law that says X, Y, and Z. How do you protect your business from that? How do you protect your customers from this? Or is it just, I do take a view, we're going to get caught. I've got lots of plans and I'm expecting 85% of them to fail, possibly 100, but I only really need one or two to hold on. And given what I think is coming, I think those little stockpiles can grow so far in lieu of sound money. How do you see corporations? Because surely corporations can be coerced through tax law, through legal script. There's a definition where I say morality and legality are never getting more divergent, because the people now writing those laws and the enforcement thereof, they determine what gets enforcement. Essentially, we're all breaking laws right now, sitting here, breaking unbelievable laws. I've just sworn never to break LinkedIn's policies because I was totally smashed out of LinkedIn because of medical misinformation. And I'm actually in a situation where I go, I'm 55 years old. If you woke me up in 19 and said, I will be thrown out of a social media platform for engaging other people with opinion, that I am thrown out for actually suggesting something would happen that is protecting a separate industry that is a pharmaceutical industry from happening on something that is shown to be true, has caused clear danger and was my primary position. You must comply or die. It is Orwellian. We forget that it is. We already are. We've crossed that line into the Orwellian. And I sometimes have to take, you know, that slap the cold water on the face moment. These people are running cover for a racket, and there is no justice. So I'm saying there's a point at which whatever you do will become illegal, but could be moral. And this is the great dilemma. People have to prepare for how far they're going to comply. Mm-hmm. What do you think in terms of that?
There's a lot to unpack there too. Look, there are a few more jaded and cynical than I am. And yet I still believe, and maybe naively so, that the institutions and the ideals of democracy, Churchill said democracy is a joke, but it's still the best joke we have, relative. I think the institutions and the ideals of a three-party system, or not a three-party system, three branches of government, the ideals of justice, the ideals of a First Amendment, the ideals of freedom of speech have been under tremendous threat, really, frankly, since the Kennedy assassination. But I still believe the more that we can educate and inform, we don't have to have revolution to have information, to have a renaissance of thinking, a renaissance of debate. I still believe, A, that's possible. Secondly, I think, you know, even if you are a cynic and you don't trust the institutions, that's why we don't hold gold in any bank, any of the too big to fail, or certainly the regional. We don't do it in safety deposit boxes. We do it in vaults in Switzerland, because even if you don't trust Switzerland, Switzerland's need to keep gold protected is an inherent national interest to them. So our interests are aligned. Even the most corrupt politicians in Switzerland aren't going to confiscate gold in Switzerland. That'd be the end of this. Other than chocolate and gold, what are they going to talk about then? So I may be wrong, but I'm strongly convinced of that. I think I've known too many people who have had gold in their homes in nice vaults that were either the people who built the vaults or the people that knew about the vaults found a way into those vaults. Again, I'm not saying that's not going to work for everyone. Everyone has to make that choice for themselves. Egon made that choice 20 years ago to pick the strongest hole in the ground in the world and guard it protectively and then have a regime that backs it. But again, you can have a different view of that, and I respect that. But I still think naively, Pollyannishly, we're going through a very dark period. There may be violence, there may be pitchforks, but ultimately, if we can slowly, peacefully educate people to think for themselves, not think according to Francis or Matt, but do their own homework, and to have these alternative platforms, which aren't here to rally revolution or call everyone a liar, but just to point out facts, mathematical facts, or even historical facts, or even opinions. And I still think there's hope in that, and I could be wrong. There's been darker times in history than this. But to the other points you're making about politics and the end game, as I said, Churchill said, you know, democracy is a mess, but it's better than others. But if you notice, and I see this very clearly, there is certain advantages to being an autocrat. Napoleon had a lot more control as an autocrat than as a duly elected democratic prime minister of France. He got the Côte Civile. He also destroyed races of horses and a whole generation of soldiers, but he had an immense power. Klaus Schwab has that kind of mentality. He clearly does. He loves the power.
How does Larry think? He loves a good democracy.
If you look at it, there's a reason Klaus Schwab invites President Xi to Davos. He admires, he's envious of that kind of power. Xi is envious of that kind of power. And in some ways, it's very effective. The People's Bank of China now lets depositors in China to buy physical gold from their bank accounts because he's trying to, by fiat, make a law that protects the Chinese middle class in ways that the Fed and the U.S. government isn't doing. But he can do things with this power that you can even see Trudeau, he's even said he kind of admires the power that Xi has. These democratically elected people or unelected people like Schwab or elected people like Trudeau have a certain envy for that kind of power. And Trudeau, whether he's related to Castro or not, there is a certain efficacy to autocracy. You can get things done real fast. But eventually, all autocrats shoot themselves in their own foot. And there's always, even if it's a minority of people, like-minded, smart, informed people can always fight the good fight. And I still believe that's possible without destroying the country or having a civil war. But there is clearly a trend towards the seductivity of more centralization.
No, they're selling communism to me. They are outright campaigning for communism and
well, it's an
form thereof, and it's pretty petrifying.
Well, what do you think when a central bank that's not part of the quote unquote branches of government artificially supports the entire bond market and by the extension Wall Street, the banking system, with money created out of thin air? That is a form of socialism for the top 10% or the top 2%. Yeah. That is also creating a class of wealth inequality in America where you have a form of feudalism. Everyone's in debt to their ears. And so they can't even gather to create an alternative argument. So, I mean,
it's also a massive tax on the other 90% on their currency, which further ensures the Gini curve flattens and hollows, and you turn that top 10% into 95% owner of the wealth. It is the establishment of a ruling class over a serfdom. And this is what worries me about the right sizing of food supply, the underwriting of inflation and bringing it can only go so far down because there's only so many lettuces and tomatoes around nowadays. And this also could be a precursor to a right sizing of the population. Because the unfortunate coincidence is this is all occurring during the time that we get all these tweets about drones flying around and tracking you and shooting people in the head and dog robots that walk around and can now carry cameras and gun mounts on the back of their backs. And it feels a bit like you've strolled onto the set of the original Terminator movie, not too far out. And I fear for this labor, because the one thing serfdom provided was slavery of labor. And as you automate AI and machine learning, that's intellectual labor, you're also getting these robotics that are doing physical labor, that are doing quite complex tasks. So they love bragging, showing the guy doing a kung fu kata, one of these robotics companies that just show that you can actually have automated guards and everything else. It's a worrying thing that all of these things have occurred along with the events of March 2020 and their repercussions. And I do think it sounds super black pill. Prepare for it, man up, and ensure that you're a survivor and have many, many jurisdictions of operation. Matt, what else would you like to tell us that you think people should consider? We've discussed gold. Does Matterhorn Asset Management do other things apart from precious metals in terms of helping people prepare for a particularly interesting history time?
I mean, we see gold obviously with a massive bias, but it's a high conviction bias that when it comes to wealth preservation for us, it's a no-brainer. It really is. And believe me, Egon and others have more than enough money not to be doing this for a living. They actually believe in it, and they believe it, and they put their money where their mouth is. That's where they hold their own assets too. We don't give advice on stock bond allocations or diversification or other forms of wealth management because we think gold is simply I'm an insurance salesman and a landlord. Right. I sell insurance for dying currencies, and I'm a landlord for the gold that you put in a hole in the ground somewhere, and I take a fee for that. And I have no problem doing that, nor does Egon. That is the oldest and most basic, simple, stupid wealth insurance that you can have. We certainly understand bond and stock markets. I talk to clients all the time about their allocations. I warn against risk parity portfolios and diversification. I even accept cash as an allocation despite inflation. But again, you got to be your
property?
Own central bank.
If I can throw that in?
Absolutely, especially certain types of property, and including agricultural land. And again, this goes back to my grandfather and my great-grandparents who went through Weimar and World Wars. Gold and land and as much as you can get. And it's that simple, stupid. And I can talk the lexicon of derivative markets, contango and backwardization and spreads, and I could do the Wall Street two-step. But all that notwithstanding, everything that sticks in my head is so simple, stupid. Currencies are losing value in front of our eyes. Get some gold, get some land. And by the way, not to be Pollyannish, time is a value. Spend time with the people that matter. Egon and I always say, at the end of the day, we don't want to be right about where the world's going and when gold really starts ripping, because we're investors, not traders. We don't look at the price move. We don't measure wealth in dollars. We measure it in grams and ounces. But even if we're right, it's going to be sad because so many things are breaking and already broken.
At that time.
Already broken.
Yeah.
And it's like, enjoy good books, enjoy romance, enjoy your family, enjoy passions. This is value too. Time is value. Common sense is value.
Living.
It's not just living is value. Freedom is value. And I still think, despite this dystopian period that we're in, that
it's a beautiful life, Matthew. It's a beautiful life to be having. And these are interesting times.
I think there's still enough people that get it, who aren't violent, who aren't anti-American, who aren't anti-government, but just want a better government, a better media, a better open debate, the kind of things that, you know, again, you know, Bill, was it William Buckley and Gore Vidal and William Buckley couldn't get more opposite views, but boy, was it fun to watch them talk. And you can see Russell Brand talking to Tucker Carlson. God bless both of them. Totally different personalities, different wardrobes, different backgrounds. You got to respect Tucker Carlson for talking to Russell Brand and for Russell Brand to talk to, because they're interested and curious. I think most Americans are trusting, most Europeans, most Asians are trusting, interested, and curious. I believe that that is the powerful force, the spiritual force that gets way past markets, economies, gold, currencies, bond spreads, central bank monetary policies. Again, very Pollyannish. I still believe we might go through some hiccups and some hangovers, but there's something good to come in a Hegelian dialectical way from this dark period. I think we'll emerge either between dystopia or a renaissance of more honest, transparent thinking. What we really need is more transparency. And what we really need is more honesty, even the honesty to admit we made a mistake. Hell, even the central banker, the World Bank of Australia, admitted that they were apologizing for the rate hikes. That was unique. You wouldn't see Powell or Yellen or Bernanke apologize for anything. There's still hope. And again, that sounds very wishy-washy. And I am pretty jaded. And I've definitely spent a lot of time talking to Uber drivers in many different countries, from the U.S. to Europe to elsewhere. And I feel it. I see it, not just in the stats and the quants and the data and the charts and the movements and the flows. I see it in the moods of the people, whether they're farmers, winemakers, single parents, multimillionaires, chateau owners, polo players. I see it. And I know there's pain coming. I was a baseball player, did a lot for me, got me into good schools. I knew I was a good baseball player, but I'll tell you one thing, my high school team could never beat the Yankees. We would lose. And I know that the debt we're in right now, and that the spreads we're looking at right now, and that the flows we're looking at right now, we are going to hit into the mother of all recessions. It's inevitable. We are going to lose. The Fed is going to lose. They will come up with miracle solutions, which no one will trust. And the question is, will we allow that to lead towards more centralized control, or will we put a stop to that? Hopefully a nonviolent stop to that by just being more aware, holding them to more accountability, and hopefully electing individuals who care more about their country than their positions of power. And again, I'll give my bias. I'm a huge fan of Robert Kennedy. He doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the fame. He was honest during COVID. He comes from a family of brave martyrs for America. I would love to see at least him get a chance to speak. The fact that the DNC won't even let him debate a current president says a lot about what they're afraid of. And I hope that Americans, they don't have to take my political views or vote for Robert Kennedy, but you got to admit that this guy has a profile in courage, what his uncle wrote about. Thinking first about your country, not about yourself. And again, JFK, what did he say at his inauguration? Ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. What we can do for our country or countries is get informed, get honest, hold people accountable, don't reach for pitchforks, don't get discouraged by the lies and duplicity and censorship that we've seen in the last few years. Keep pushing, keep having conversations. You can debate everything I say, you can disagree with everything I say. I welcome it, but I think we need to have more conversations, more open discussions. I have no doubt that I would lose against the Yankees, and I have no doubt that the gold is going to beat the dollar. None. I could be wrong. Maybe we would have beat the Yankees. Maybe I'd have thrown a better game. I don't think we could have made it two innings without being destroyed. But I know that the currency's purchasing power is dying in front of our eyes. It's been happening empirically, objectively. It's not discussed. Gold is not discussed in Goldman Sachs or JP Morgan. All currencies. And so I have common sense, simple, stupid knowledge, despite all the hedge funds, law firms, big money, allocations, Swiss, New York, Wall Street, la-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's so simple. And I want to spend as much time trying to keep the complex simple without diluting the importance of the complexity, though, without diluting the importance of the empirical realities with the charts or the flows or the numbers. 150% increase, 1,100 tons by central banks in 1 year has massive implications. That's a mathematical fact. You have to look at that. You have to look at a public debt of nearly $32 trillion. That has a mathematical impact. When you raise rates into a $32 trillion public debt, that's a problem. You cannot compare Volcker to Powell. I think Ronnie Sterpler's article, that's like comparing Brad Pitt to Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
There are things that math does help clarify, but despite all that—
It's associative thinking. People always do that. They also say, oh, it'll be just like the 70s. It's not going to be like the 70s. No. You didn't have the space. You didn't have the dominance. You didn't have everything you had. You didn't have the same level of debt. You didn't have, that's why it's hyperstagflation. It's absolutely fascinating, Michael. We truly enjoyed this discussion, and we are like-minded on many things. I just fear you can't vote your way to freedom here. I would like to think you actually get real choice, but I don't assess that. I've probably managed to be even more yellow jaundiced than your rather exceptional tan. I managed to be more yellow versioned of that. But tell us a little bit of how people can engage who feel related to you. So American citizens, we have quite a lot of Americans. It's 25% of our YouTube channel. The other 24% is UK. So, the traditional guys, Switzerland's not a million miles away. How do they engage with Matterhorn Asset Management if they want to have a chat with you and discuss you looking after part of their portfolio?
Yeah, well, the simplest way is just to go to our website, which is goldswitzerland.com. Really simple. Gold Switzerland clearly shows our Swiss bias despite all these jaded opinions. And our group is called Matterhorn Asset Management. And Egon von Greyers and I, and occasionally Ronnie Sterfler, bring in some great reports every week, or I think pretty blunt, candid reports. We're all very concerned, but we're not completely without hope. And look, we're not going to save the world with gold. We can save little pieces of the world. We can do little things. Gold doesn't solve all problems, and we recognize that, but it certainly solves a currency problem. And we don't say you need to put 100% of your money in gold, but you got to insure your currency in some form. If you want to do that at home, I think there are massive risks. If you want to do it in ETF, wouldn't recommend it. Want to put it in a commercial bank, not my biggest choice. But again, at least consider physical gold in some form. And again, our minimums are very high because it's a high net worth clientele. But we speak about gold to everyone because everyone can get gold. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to come to Zurich. You don't have to go into the Swiss Alps or fly a private jet to our offices. People do, and I'll be honest, that's our clients are. But we speak to everyone. We speak to everyone because the truth is universal on this point, and anyone can buy gold slowly but surely. And anyone can challenge our ideas, but our articles are pretty blunt, pretty candid, hopefully backed by a lot of objective empirical data. And, I'm politically cynical, but I've seen heroes. I've seen profiles in courage. I still think there are still heroes in politics. I still think there are good, honest people in journalism, too. You just have to try harder to find them. Even in finance, you got to find them. And they're out there. And more people who once saw us as gold bugs or tinfoil hatted have the same views, whether it's Druckenmiller or Dalio. There's more people that are catching on, or even Paul Tudor Jones. These are classic insiders, but they're buying gold. And I can't give the names of our clients or the amounts of their spends. Very smart people are buying gold. Guys that might be running money in hedge funds, but they're putting their private money in gold. And again, that's not a sales pitch. It's common sense. You don't have to be a millionaire. You don't have to come to Switzerland. You can do it from anywhere. But think about gold. The Indians, the Chinese, the Russians, they've been doing this for years. And again, the fact that China is allowing natural citizens, ordinary citizens, to buy gold because they're trying to put a moat and protect their middle class in an autocracy, and I get it, emperor for life isn't the same as the president-elect. But they're actually concerned about social unrest and protecting the currency and the purchasing power of their citizens Well, what are we doing? We're giving them an invisible tax of inflation. We're giving up fantasies like modern monetary theory. We're creating wealth inequality. We've got a feudalistic society that still has the image of Babe Ruth and the Great America and the flag over Iwo Jima, but we're not that country anymore. We can be that country again. And I personally think, and this is where I'm very biased, I'll give kudos to you know, Robert Kennedy Jr. I know a lot of people in that family. I know he's honest. I think he's sincere. I think he cares more about this country than he does about himself. And whether it's Kennedy or anyone else, the more we can get people like that who've served their country in some way, who believe in their country in some way, whether that's in Italy, China, hopefully it won't be in China because he's emperor for life, but anywhere in the West where democracy still has the illusion of free choice and the illusion of elections, which I still believe is possible, let's put in better people and let's audit the Fed. And let's
think about- say, yeah, on the better people, the pivotal moments of what I would describe as Bidenomics is something you've already referenced, the seizure of Russian assets on the dollar SWIFT chain as being a seminal moment, and the then tactical withdrawal from Afghanistan. Those two things happened in quite short succession. And one is you're backed by your military might. So the last thing to go is the force. And that was deeply humiliating, seeing people running after C-130s on airlines and a complete cut and run. And the temperance of that, the temporary nature of it and the frivolousness of it all, and the agnostic rails of the financial system then coming under political attack. Those two moments will go down as accelerants in the decline of the American empire if it turns out to be that way. Boy, oh boy. And just having him out would probably be a great start in terms of
that.
That's not a pitch for Republicans versus Democrats. That's a pitch for a particular major set of eras. That's not the America I grew to know and love.
No, it isn't.
Excellent.
It's
Michael, great. Thank you, Matthew. Sorry.
Matthew.
Thank you so much. I turned you into the priest, high disciple, St. Michael. Yes, Matthew.
Matthew was another good
apostle. As a saint, of course. Yeah. And I speak as a St. Francis as well. Matthew, I apologize for that. My dyslexia, autism kicking in there with all this excitement about gold talk. I absolutely concur with you. It's fire burning season. Fire insurance it's house burning season. So fire insurance is the best investment, and that is gold in terms of that. And that means when everyone else has no house anymore, you have the replacement home and some. You can over-insure, you know, and I'm overweight on metals. And we also use, I don't just put everything at homes. I absolutely say I stress tested you, but I still think Switzerland is one of the best. And having non-bank vaults, you can't have it all at home for the obvious reasons. And you know, you can have, it's very difficult to turn your home into Fort Knox. So I feel that you are definitely offering a service with real passion and real principle. I want to thank you for that and your corporation for that. And I want to encourage people watching that they should be engaging with a company such as yours to some degree, because I am doing exactly that myself. And I say that as someone who feels aligned to your message. Thank you so much for coming on, Matthew Pipkenberg.
Thank you. It was a real pleasure, Francis. Great conversation.
Bye-bye.